Hey, welcome to Meat House. Jeff here. Chris here. How you doing?
Doing good. Been a fantastic week. Got some new things started. Looking forward to that. I found out I had to replace my black cherry because I'm out.
You're out? Okay.
I ran out of black cherry. I made a 7 gallon batch of black cherry, and that was like less than a year ago.
Gone. Gone. It's funny how the things we enjoy drinking get drank.
Oh, man. It wasn't just me. It was so many people said, that's good.
You know, to have friends that like your stuff and want more of it, it's a good problem to have, right?
The blessing and the curse. Blessing and the curse. Most of it's a blessing. So
yeah,
I'm happy about
yeah.
it.
So, hey, getting right off the top here, let's thank our listeners. You guys tune in week after week. And I know we are working real hard on getting stuff onto, you know, Spotify and iHeartRadio and Apple Podcasts.
And I'll be honest, it's mostly me because I'm just not tech savvy for this part of it. I'm working on it. I'm trying, honestly, guys.
I'm jumping in here too and kind of help out so we can get this to you easier. Like, it would be great to subscribe and not have to go to our website and like download the file. It's a lot easier if you can do it that way. So we're trying to make it happen for you.
We are working on it.
We appreciate the hell out of you guys for, you know, doing things the hard way
and taking some time out of your day once a week to spend time with us. We appreciate it. And thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
Those of you that reach out to say, hey, I like what you did here, there, you know, the ones that shoot us an email at info@themeathouse.com or reach out to us on Facebook.
We see it.
Yeah. We love you guys.
We love you guys.
It's as much as I could just sit here, you know, hanging out with my buddy, drinking some meat and shooting the shit.
And believe me, that's been on the table. That has been on the table.
There are plenty of weekends we didn't record and we just did exactly that. Okay. The fact that we have you guys as our, you know, third person around the table here to throw ideas back and forth with and share stuff with, it makes this fun. It makes this worthwhile.
And we really appreciate it. It's cool. Secondly, Bacchus and Barleycorn.
They've been our sponsors since we got this thing back on its legs, and they are consistently just such a great source for equipment, information, whatever we need. I went in there yesterday, actually, to get some more dual fine because we use that stuff all the time.
All the time.
And
there's been a time or two I've had to use dual fine twice.
You got to get stuff into bottles, and you want it nice when it goes in there.
So yeah, so there you go.
And I was just kind of doing my usual, okay, well, I need some more dual fine. I probably don't have enough of this yeast. I probably need to get some more oak. And then I just do the wing circuit around the store and see what's new.
My son wants black licorice. Guess what's coming.
He has crystallized lemon now, which is really interesting, and I
didn't see that last time.
Yeah, I don't know if that's brand new, but that's one of those new things, like, I just made a lemon mead last month, and oh my god, why didn't I get that?
That would have been awesome.
I don't know that it needs a lot more lemon. We were pretty pleased with that. It was like, what, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, 3 weeks ago. And I forgot to tell you, I gave some to my wife. Uh-huh. She was very pleasant. She reminds her of a lemon cello, which she loves.
Yeah, yeah. And oh my gosh. I was real pleased with that. I think it... I'm not 100% certain that was the level I want to... say, okay, this is where I'm happy with. Maybe it was 90%, but I'm getting to the point where it's like, okay, I'm not just saying good enough. Done with that.
But I'll be honest with you, I love lemon. Mm-hmm. If you put more lemon in, I wouldn't be mad. That's just me, though.
Fair. I think is the problem I was getting as I was back sweetening it and adding, you know, more honey to the mix was it was also getting some of that lemon note from the honey into it. And so it was getting more lemon as it was getting more sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And the ratio was not quite right, and I didn't want to add just basic, like, you know, wildflower honey to bring up more sweetness. I kind of just liked where it was getting. I was like, okay, well.
Yeah, but we're picky like that. We love, you know, yeah. This honey's going to do this for us. So, yeah, that's because we have our lab coats on, and we're trying to make better and better.
I think we were supposed to be talking about Bacchus and Barleycorn and how they're a great sponsor, and we really enjoy them.
So, if you're making beer, wine, mead, cheese, yogurt, kombucha.
Whether you're in the Kansas City area or you're listening from anywhere in the country.
Around the world.
Right. I don't know if they do international shipping, but I'm going to
bet
they try.
I bet you will try.
Yeah, they have so much stuff. There are so many rabbit holes you can find yourself tripping into, and they are ridiculously friendly and easygoing. It's consistently worth my time to spend a little time figuring out what they got and what I can do with what they got.
And honestly, if you ever stop by and visit them, you can walk in and put a glass of something in your hand to stay a while.
Yeah.
It's nice.
Yeah. And hey, while you're there, while you're checking out their stuff on the website or in person, what have you, use our code MHP10.
Give yourself 10% off. Let them know that you're listening to us, and everybody wins.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. We're getting the name out, and we're getting them a little business. We're getting us a little you know, hosting and
Hosting cred.
right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody wins there, right?
Everybody wins. All right. So today, yeah, last week we talked about faults and how
Faults.
to correct them
Right.
as best you could. Most
Right.
of the time, it's something you got to prevent, but there's a few things you can do here and there. I wanted to talk this week about how to prepare your meat for a competition, not as a judge, but as an entry.
Right. We've talked about judging a few times because, you know, I've got the perspective on that. You've stewarded, you've been at
Oh
competitions
yeah,
a couple times now, and
and I highly recommend if you ever get an opportunity to do that, do it. It's a lot of fun. You meet great people, you have a good time, and oh my gosh, you get to try mead. What a horrible experience.
So there are, I think, a few different topics we wanted to cover in this like umbrella topic here, and I think one of them is like just getting ready for the competition, what
Yeah.
you need to do there. I kind of wanted to talk about, hey, when we're finishing our meat, when we're doing those last steps before we bottle, and we have an eye for putting this in competition, what do we want to do, right? And that'll probably feed into getting it prepped for a competition too.
I also want to touch lightly on getting the right category because the one time I've gone to it, I was wrong.
For sure, for
I
sure,
got
for sure, for
judged, but
sure.
I was disqualified from competition possibility.
Right, yeah, you got the feedback, you didn't get the points, you didn't we were not eligible for medals and things like
Yeah,
that, and that can happen.
I was disqualified myself from competition. Still gave me feedback. Very kind of them, but it would have been simple as switching one category.
Sure,
And that's
sure.
all it was.
And the other thing I wanted to talk about, because it's unfortunately we don't all have the opportunity to have like a club that is shipping 20 people's entries up to the Valkyrie's Horn in Minneapolis. Sometimes you got to take it through FedEx and UPS. So how do you pack that?
Yeah, that's really important because God forbid you spend all the time, the weeks and weeks and months, get it packaged, get it sent, and it breaks on the way
Right.
or unbottles and something happens.
Right.
So here we
So,
go.
let's talk about finishing a mead with an eye for competition.
Okay.
Because, you know, that's kind of, I think, the start of it all. You go, hey, I like the way this is turning out. I want to make sure this is going to present well at a competition. And I'm just going to grab the mead score sheet from the BJCP here to take a peek at.
First thing I want to tell you right now is we've said this time and time again, make notes. Because if you make a competition-worthy mead, for God's sakes, you're going to want to make it again.
Yeah. No,
Make your recipes.
it never hurts to have too much information. It can hurt to have too little information.
Yeah.
The wind was out of the southwest. My attitude was melancholy,
And
and
it
I
was
ate
30%
avocado
humidity.
toast for breakfast.
Yeah. It may or may not matter, but
It probably, the avocado toast and the melancholy
Probably
mood probably don't, but.
no, your mood can make a difference. I mean, I will hear both Jake at Bacchus and a couple of my friends say, "You whisper to the mead, don't you?" And I said, "Yeah, a little bit," because like I talked to my plants, I whispered to my mead. Yeah, who knows?
You know, on my brew days, when I'm not like showing you how to make beer or mead, usually I'm listening to reggae or ska, because you can't listen to it and not be happy.
True.
And it's just like, okay, yeah.
Now, who knows? If it doesn't matter, probably not. But could it? I'm not going to say no.
Right. Yeah. You just, good vibes, dude. Good vibes.
But okay, we talked about last time and I want to touch on this one really fast because it's 6 points. People eat and drink with their eyes,
Sure, they do. Yeah.
and the polish of your mead, it cannot be hazy. You will lose points. You need a clear one. Speaking of clear wine, we have a new one.
Yes, we do. Oh, we should get into our meat of the day because we're wasting time not drinking.
Yeah,
That's silly.
I'm ashamed.
This was a couple weeks ago. I got a shipment from Sap House, and this one has been sitting on my counter, and it just sounds so damn interesting.
It does. It's
This is the smoked rhubarb and fir tips. And I've had fir tips in a mead before. Fir
I
tips
have
are
not.
fun. They kind of, for a weird evergreen thing, they have an almost like citrusy kind of right note to them. The smoked rhubarb, though?
That's
I
new.
don't know what to expect
I
out of
have no
that.
idea what to do with this one. This is completely new to me. But smoked rhubarb and evergreen fir tips.
Yeah. Which is, the fir tips are like those. The very bright green little fresh yearly growth at the end of Evergreen trees in the early part of spring.
Yeah.
So those
So
are
they've harvested a bunch of these probably last year.
either that or like,
Really early in the year.
Yeah, March, kind of early in the year.
And they put this medium. Now, my son did find that pine needles can be a fermentation medium as a replacement for yeast. But this is, light straw colored, very clear, very.
Oh yeah. Well, and this is appearance-wise, they've probably polished this with filters and things like that
Yeah.
because they're a professional mead maker. We expect them to. But yeah, it's a light to medium straw, very clear. I get a little bit of leg here, but I'm not using the best glass for that either.
But the smell
Oh yeah.
is odd.
Well, I think.
I'm not getting really as much evergreen as I am weird. I can't identify that.
I'm gonna try to just get my nasal palate kind of clear here and
I get a little bit of the fur, but not really a lot to me.
I'm getting a kind of an herbal note that I'm thinking is the rhubarb. I'm not getting smoke.
Don't
I'm
have
getting a
smoke.
little bit of maybe fir tree, but fir has a kind of that minty kind of character
Yeah.
to it too.
Oh, no. Let's get down to brass tacks here. Whoa! That's got a powerful taste.
Yeah.
I can taste the smoke.
The smoke is, I taste the smoke more on the back end. It has some citrus up front.
Oh, man, it's harsh, hard on the citrus. Not harsh, but hard on the citrus.
Yeah,
Oh, it's good, though.
this is dry, actually.
It's very dry.
This is acidic, obviously. And the smoke is kind of, it's not as pronounced as I thought it would be, but I'm pretty glad it's not as pronounced as I thought it
Yeah, but I will tell you
would be. It could be
that
worse.
mintiness of the fur is very much there, right smack in the middle.
I think the rhubarb is kind of the primary on that acidicness, because it's rhubarb. We know what rhubarb does.
Yeah.
The fur is also there, but it's kind of it has a more of a kind of a rounded
Yeah.
citrusy note.
The rhubarb is, I call it the base, the fur I would call it as the, it's holding it together nicely.
It's the supporting actor kind of thing that really blends out the show. The
Nice.
smoke is there. It's God, that's an interesting mead.
No, that is hard for me. That is the strangest mead. Not good mead, strangest mead I've ever tasted.
Yeah, no, this is just a weird, interesting, fun one, I
Yeah, it's
think.
just fun mead. I mean, so we have smoked rhubarb and fur
Right.
for the mead today. And Sap House, I don't know where your inspiration came from. Hope you got it sober, but.
It's fun. I
Well
like
done.
it. That's
Okay, back to getting ready for a show. Now, like I said, presentation is everything.
right. So at the
Okay.
very least, you probably want to use dual fine or another fining agent like bentonite. These guys are not expensive. I think dual fine packs are like what, $4 maybe,
Maybe.
$5. You get their dosed or whatever for
Yeah,
5 gallons, but
it's dosed for 5 gallons. It's a packet with two separate parts for the two separate additives. You cut them both open, dump it in, stir it up, leave it. It'll do its job. What it's going to do is gather electrically, it'll gather all the particulates and
Right.
magnetize them to itself and fall to the bottom.
Yeah, one of them is positively charged, one of them is negatively charged. They are ionic little things, high school chemistry. And it grabs the stuff that is clouding up your mead, and it all kind of glomps together until it's too heavy to float.
And the first time I ever used it, I had a very, very murky Chardonnay. And I put it in there and I went back 12 hours later and it was clear. I could see through it in a 5 gallon bucket. I was stunned. It was all at the bottom and it made racking so much easier.
For sure. Yeah. Use fining agents. Honestly, as a judge, I can tell you we're not coming into this from a hey, judge's perspective kind of a thing. We're entering perspective.
This
But
is
as a judge, I can tell you generally the 6 points you can get for the appearance alone, I just want to give you points.
Yeah.
Usually I'm going to give you 5 points if you're giving me something clear. If it's sparkling and a pretty color and I just like it,
Six
six.
points.
Yeah.
And
I want to give you points here.
now, as a judge, how many points are available for our mead?
50 points is available altogether. From that breakdown, you get 10 for the bouquet aroma, you get 6 for appearance, you get 24 for flavor. Almost half of your points are flavor alone. You get another 10 for overall impression.
Okay, there you go. 50
So,
points. Don't throw away six because you didn't feel like it.
Especially when I just want to give you points.
Yeah. And honestly, most of the judges I talk to, they want to give you points, but you got to get them. You got to earn them. So make it clear. Use your fine agents. And if you're doing it for judging, filter.
Right.
I know Jeff doesn't filter much. I filter almost all the time, unless it's a very small batch. Filter.
It might be the difference between a 5 and a 6 point. More often than not, I'm looking at color and just how pretty I think it is for that extra point. But, I mean, this is your apple polishing teacher's pet business at that point. So, anyway, the other thing you want to think about more than anything else is just bottles.
Yeah.
Because I know you usually use, like, the 750 mil
wine bottles. Yeah.
If you're sending those to competition, you're sending a lot more than you need to. Because they ask for 3 bottles.
And I'll be honest, the first time I sent them, I got 2 half bottles, mm-hmm. like 2 beer bottles, and filled them. And they asked for 2. Some asked for 3.
Right.
Give them what they want. The one I was sent to, they said they want amber-colored beer bottles.
Right.
I sent amber-colored beer bottles. I don't know. Okay, when I was a steward, we'd open the bottles, pour them in the samples in little cups, and take them out, leaving the bottle behind. They never saw the bottle.
Right.
The reason they want a uniform bottle is there is nothing to detract from the mead itself.
Right. They want 12-ounce beer bottles. It's an easy, manageable size to use for the first place. They usually want 2 to 3 bottles because they want... There is no telling how long it's going to be between when your mead was judged in the flight for, you know, semi-sweet berry meads, for example, versus when it goes to best of show if it wins. Or if it gets, you know, judged on a flight with other berry meats or whatever, you want to have fresh ones to open. Generally speaking, you want to have 1 bottle for the first round of judging, 1 round available for best of show kind of judging. The 3rd bottle is just in case one breaks, more often than not. Some ask for 2, 1 for the best of show, 1 for... first round, and if one of them breaks, you still get judged in first round, but you can't advance to best of show, even though you otherwise would have.
Yes.
So unfortunate. So if you have an option to send 3, I would send 3.
Yeah.
The other thing to consider here, but the point I was trying to make, is, hey, when you're setting up to do this, if you think something is going to be worthy of competition, maybe instead of, you know, 5 wine bottles, you just get 10 beer bottles, and you bottle 10 beer bottles worth of your mead, just set those aside for, hey, Valkyrie's Horn is coming up, or the Mazer Cup is coming up, or my local homebrew competition is coming up, and I can drop off 2 there and see what happens. Do it.
Yeah. Get all your wines together at one time for all the competitions you're going to do.
Because at the end of the day, when you're doing your bottling, get it prepped now instead of trying to move it from a wine bottle into a 12-ounce beer bottle, because that's oxygen exposure. That's going to make it...
It'll make it less.
Right. It will lose your points for oxidization. It will, it's a infection vector. It's, there's so much that can go wrong moving from one container to another. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Plan ahead. Number 2, after you got the taste you want, and get a second opinion from your friends. That's kind of what they're for. I mean, ask for a harsh critique. Your friends want to make you happy. They're good friends. And tell me, you know, but I will tell people, tell me what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Tell me what I can do better.
If you can get a brand trust of 2 to 4 people that you trust to give you honest feedback, you don't necessarily need to be a wine snob like me, but somebody that can say, hey, I like this. I would like it more if you did this.
Take it.
That's the kind of honesty you want in this process. You kind of want multiple people because there might be somebody that says, hey, this rhubarb is too rhubarby. It's a little bit harsh for me. And you might be right on the damn money. So you do kind of want to have a group consensus here.
Yeah.
More than anything. But
do it. Okay. Once you've got your bottles together, capped, ready to go, it's time to send them. Here's where the rub is.
Well, prepping the bottles is another thing because almost every competition uses the same kind of, it's a freeware website kind of platform you can install on a website. And the entrants get a printout of their entries. What they ask you to do is those bottles, they'll ask you to either rubber band or otherwise secure them to the bottle, use a nondescript cap, and those printouts you cut out, you set those together. But the idea is that those are easy to remove or easy to, make nondescript other than the label itself.
Reason being is they have to identify who got what. When you're filling out the form, there's a section that says, what is it, basically?
Right.
You need to describe. Tell them your honey type. Tell them fruits, herbs, whatever you used.
Yes and no.
Okay. I was very forward about all that.
You don't need to go into your process extensively. We've talked about it before. If you have three or four different fruits, let's say, you've got a raspberry, blackberry, and strawberry meat. But for whatever reason, when you're tasting it, raspberry, blackberry, they come through. Strawberry, just you're having a hard time picking it out. Don't declare strawberry.
Okay.
Because if I can't taste strawberry, I take away points for that. If there's an extra little fruity something that kind of adds to the mix, but I can't put my finger on it, I don't take away points for that.
Okay.
So, if you declare something and I can't taste it,
you're hurting yourself.
Right. If you don't declare something and there's an extra note that I'm not sure where I came from, it's just a little added complexity.
Okay. So, seeing as I only had one berry and one spice in mine, I told them everything.
I've also had a number of people that write their entry format the same way that they would write copy for the back of a bottle of red wine. Oh, this is an orange blossom honey with notes of baking spices from the oak and a touch of blah, blah, blah from the honey varietal and things like that. Like, okay, dude, A, purple prose. I'm pretty sure there's a character count max on this form. So just be sparse and be, say, hey, these are the ingredients. This is this kind of honey, this kind of fruit.
I would also, personally, I would say put in your either ABP or your designation of SAC standard.
Right. There's going to be a section for, is it carbonated? Is it not? Is it sweet? Is it dry? Is it semi-sweet?
Semi-sweet.
Is it SAC? Is it hydromel? Is it standard? Those are all like little pull-downs in this software that everybody uses.
Fill it out. Be honest to the point of, yes, you can taste this.
Right.
So my mistake on that one. I'll take it. I'll take that hit. Once you get that filled out and then attached with rubber bands or whatever you need to, I was fortunate enough. There was a local contest I went to. I took it to a drop point locally. If it's out of state, long ways away, if you have a big enough state, the other side of the state, here's where we run into a rub.
Yeah. Shipping.
Shipping.
Shipping can be... Well, do we want to talk about prepping stuff for competition on the finishing side too, though, before we get into shipping?
Yeah, let's do that.
Because I think when you're looking at a meat and you're finishing it out, another thing you want to do is just make sure you are emphasizing the stuff you want to emphasize. And this is where that brain trust comes in again. If you are entering a berry mead and you're not getting quite the flavor you're looking for, that's one of those things you've got to fix before you go into competition with it. I mean, whether that's, hey, we're going to add a little bit more raspberry puree in secondary or finishing.
Or maybe whatever. Some freeze-dried strawberries.
So yeah, exactly.
That never happens.
You got to basically, look at the score sheet. You've got points for appearance. You've got points for flavor. You've got all kinds of different, descriptors or, the faults that we talked about last time. Are you feeling any faults? If you're feeling faults, some of those just, you don't want to do that. Some of those are balance issues, right? And so you need to tweak the balance. Maybe you just want to tweak the balance a little bit to be a perfectionist. Get a little bit more tannin or a little bit more acidity to it to brighten it up if it's feeling a little loose and flabby, right?
But I would say in the descriptor, if you're making a sour mead, say it's a sour mead.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't surprise them.
Be explicit with what you are presenting. This is a tart cherry mead.
Okay. Because then they're expecting a tart cherry mead, not a cherry mead that suddenly was tart, because that's going to cost you.
As a judge, I'm going to judge you on what you tell me you're sending me and what you actually send me. If you give me something that is, supposed to be dry and sweet and... Or sorry, sack and sweet, and I get a hazy mess that is very sweet. Well, yeah, you're kind of right. You're kind of shooting yourself in the foot.
If I'm telling you, sweet, a sack sweet still, make sure it's a sack sweet still.
Exactly.
My experience, my first round experience, it was a lemon still sack. It wasn't still. Popping the cap off that thing, I got showered with lemon mead. And I'm sitting there with mead all over me going, I look back down the card, still. I'm not a judge. But I know this is not going to work out well for the person who sent this in.
Well, and look, at larger competitions like Valkyrie's Horn, you have a cellar staff that, the prep stuff and brings it out to the table, stewards, things like that. Smaller competitions at your homebrew clubs, they may have one or two stewards that is just running bottles to the table, and the judges are the ones doing the opening, the bottle inspection, all that.
Oh, I don't want to shower, judge.
You really don't. I've never gotten a shower. I have had to deal with gushers where, we hold it over the edge. All right, we got a gusher. Hey, grab me that spit bucket over here. We need a hand. And
But there you go.
not pleasant.
Now, in the man's defense, I was told it was a very good sparkling mead, what there was left of it. Mind you, there was like an inch left in a 12-ounce bottle after it stopped the geyser.
Right.
And I had to use the second bottle he sent for the first part of the competition.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate.
Because now, if it did really well, which is unlikely at this point, but if it did really well, it was super good and all that, there was nothing for second or last round.
Right. And again, this is one of those things like we were talking about last time, with faults, good process, clean process, and sanitization will prevent this every time. Whether that was a wild yeast that got in there after he had stabilized his bead, or he just didn't stabilize enough, or he didn't bother to stabilize. I'm not going to judge. I don't know the circumstances. That was a year and change ago.
Yeah, but give the judge what you tell them you got. They got. But okay, let's go on to because for presentation, you have it filtered. It's sparkling. You're going to get good marks for presentation.
Right.
The flavors are solid with what you've said.
Aroma's there. At this point, we're like, okay, this is what I'm sending in. I think that's, you want to have that brain trust to go, okay, this is what I want to present. This is how I want to do it. I would like it a little bit less or a little bit more. You've done all that fine tuning. Now we're at competition level.
Now, gain it to the competition. If it's local, drop it off. It's easiest, best way to do it. You're not going to lose any tags, shipping, all that. Just drop it off. Out of state, you've got to mail it more than likely.
Not mail it.
You cannot mail it USPS.
Right. You have to ship it
You have to
through
ship it.
UPS or FedEx or DHL maybe, but UPS and FedEx are more likely than not the ones you're dealing with. It is a federal crime to send alcohol through the
U.S. Postal
USPS. So don't. Just
Yeah.
don't.
Just don't do it. I don't do it. And, if you're going to the competition, you may have to take two trips.
If you're sending something through UPS or FedEx, you're supposed to be to ship alcohol legally through UPS or FedEx. You're supposed to be a
Licensed.
licensed producer through the TTB, and you're supposed to have special like labels and things like that, and have somebody sign for it that's over 21 years of age when it arrives there. I know because I've got two different meaderies that send me quarterly boxes of stuff, but you can get away with it if you have to. And generally, like if they ask you for a content description of your box or your package, it's product samples or yeast sample or something along those lines. That is, there's a reason that it could be alcoholic smelling if it breaks, but
Not necessarily wine.
right, yeah.
Now, that is a little dishonest, but by the same token, it's not illegal to send them through these mediums.
Do you know what happens if your box breaks midshipment and that there's alcohol leaking out of it? What UPS does as far as
They throw it away.
basically they clean it up.
Yeah. If the box breaks and you send it to the USPS, you're going to have people knocking on your door. And we don't want this for you. Bottom line
UPS and
is,
FedEx generally do not report that to the government, is what I'm saying. They do not say, hey, You know, in one case, apparently, when I was managing shipments for the Iron Bee, somebody's box broke. UPS repacked for them. Like,
Bonus.
the one bottle broke, and I got five bottles for the competition when they sent six, and it was all nicely packed and arranged. And I got to talking to the guy, and I was like, I didn't pack it that way. The only person that could have packed it that way was UPS because it broke.
Bonus.
Yeah.
Now, for packing, you want, there are actual wine bottle packing things you can get on Amazon.
Yep, you can absolutely get. They look like how do I want to describe it? They kind of look like little the floaty rings you get for infants.
Yeah.
Those are a great way to do it. I highly recommend them. I have also done just basic packing materials you can get at like Walmart or Office Depot or
Packing
things like
cans. You can even get the styrofoam wine holders.
that. Those work too. This is ultimately this depends on how much you want to outlay for this, and if you're going to enter competitions, you're going to have an infrastructure for this at the end of the day. The way that I have done this before, here are some strong tips. First, get your box. Find the box you're going to use for sending your supplies and get a large trash bag to line that box with. That makes it a little bit more leak-proof to survive the journey. Two, understand whichever way you're going to use for packing supplies, these are going to get beat up and thrown around.
A lot.
Have you like ever, I did not exactly a job interview, but hey, come check out the workplace kind of thing for FedEx to see if I wanted to do that back in college. I didn't want to do that, it turns out. But have you ever done anything like that?
No, but I have had friends that did work there. One of them was called Goliath. He would pick a box up and heave it over three racks to another person that might or might not catch for that stack.
Yeah, no, I'm not being facetious when I say they are literally throwing stuff around when they're loading these trucks. They're picking it up and it,
It sees airtime.
right, it's in the air, it's moving. Sometimes it's going to hit its target. Most of the time, I'll give them credit. Most of the time, it's going to hit its target and it's going to,
It'll be just
land
fine.
with a little thump. Sometimes it's probably going to hit hard.
And so every once in a while, it's going to just crash. Pack for it. Everything you can do to make it better.
Right. So here's my standard when I'm doing it. Again, line the inside of your box with a big trash bag. Pack inside the trash bag. Usually what I do, I have my bottles with the label attached. Sometimes I use plastic, like the clear packing tape, just to stick that to the bottle. Sometimes I'll use a rubber band. Generally, I will use either those wine bottle containers or like the foam sheets you get, and wrap each individual bottle with those, and then two to three to a gallon Ziploc container. I'll put those in there. Like usually, hey, I've got three of my sizer that I'm entering. I'll put those in one bag, and then I'll put three of my berry meats in another one. Okay.
And if you have the option, vacuum pack it. That doesn't hurt either.
It doesn't. You can do that. The main thing I look for is once I've got that, then I'll use something like packing peanuts or bubble wrap or something like that between those containers and above and below to make it so it's not shifting around very much and make sure it has some give if it does shift around. You want to do that. The reason I like the foam paper or something between those bottles is because more often than not, the bottles that are right next to each other in those containers, bumping against each other, are causes of breakage. So, yeah, padding things out like that, keeping things contained. Again,
Ziplocs.
gallon Ziplocs are great inside the container, so you've got more than one layer in case there is a leak or a small breakage.
And there you go. And then ship.
Yep. And unfortunately, you're going to pay a lot for shipping.
Yeah, that shipping ain't cheap.
Yeah.
All right, so we have it packed, and we're gonna ship it out. It costs, but things are they are what they are.
Yeah, we'll take this to, wherever we're taking it, whether it's like the FedEx office or Office Depot or, whatever, wherever
You're sitting at
source.
where? Now, okay, now it's officially out of your hands. Now it is generally when the time that you have to put these in way before the event.
Your deadline to ship is at least a week before judging starts, usually, because once they receive it, they've got to sort it and they've got to figure out how to, where it goes in the grand scheme of different entries of similar stuff that's going to get judged altogether. Right.
I mean, how many bottles we have last year at Valkyrie? 800?
Something like that. I'm
Yeah, I
not
mean,
surprised. And then that might just be the. Was that 800 including commercial or excluding commercial?
I'm
You
not
know?
even sure, to be honest.
Because.
But, and that's not how many bottles. That was how many
Right.
entries
So there's 2 to 3
per
bottles per
entry.
entry. And generally, the way that they sorted out in Valkyrie's Horn, which I think was probably the smarter way to do it with that many, they had A bottles and then they had entirely separate boxes for the B bottles in case something happened to the A bottle.
That's exactly what they did. And it took, okay, they got there a couple days early and started sorting them out. They were sorted out the day after the first day of judging.
Right.
We stayed, some of you, not me personally, but I didn't know there was a problem. They stayed through a good part of the night reorganizing all the B bottles in the boxes. It's a huge undertaking. You got to give them the week at least, guys. If you're late, don't
Yeah,
send.
if you're going to be late, you've missed your deadline.
Yeah.
If you're unfortunately, especially these days, it feels like there is no shipping company that is 100% on their timelines, right?
No.
You know, UPS says, "Hey, it'll be here Thursday." It's here Monday, the week after.
Yeah. So send that as early as you possibly can.
Right.
At this point, it's out of your hands and you've done what you can do. Keep an eye on the website. They generally post the results on the website when it's time. Give them a few days after the event itself to log it all in.
Look out for emails from the competition organizers because, hey, if there is a problem with your bottles, like, oh my God, two of your bottles broke in shipment, we only have one. We can enter it, but you're going to be excluded from best of show or whatever. Cool. At least they're going to try
Yeah,
to let you know.
and will they do that? They'll try. Is the bottom line, but that's what you have to do, guys. I mean, it's a lot of work to make mead, but it's a lot more work, in my opinion, to ship mead. I mean, I've got people, friends of mine, that have moved all over the country, and I have a few friends over in Europe and such. That can I get a bottle of mead? If you can figure out how in the heck I can get it to you, go for it. We'll do what we can.
It's one thing to send mead within the country. It's another thing entirely to try and ship it
And
internationally.
yeah, and
Oh my God.
but the point is, we haven't figured out how yet.
No.
And the guys I have halfway across the country from where I'm at, hey, who wants some meat? Dude, I'd love to give you some meat. But how? It's
I have gotten one bottle of international mead to me.
wow.
Early in the mead house thing, I had a it was hibiscus, it was chamomile, and it was I want to say like za'atar or something like that. It was a third spice, kind of a Middle Eastern spice blend, and I sent that to Maser Cup, and I want to say this was like a couple months into the start of this podcast. It just happened to win third in category at Maser Cup. The first thing I ever entered into a competition, and I got a cup for
Very
it.
nice.
But we published the recipe, and one of the listeners out of Japan made it and liked it, and he's got a little meat business there. And basically, a couple of my friends were going to Japan. They were going to be Tokyo, and I was like, "Hey, do you have a bottle of mead I can buy from you and just have my friends take back?" And yeah, they met up with this guy in Tokyo that I knew from the podcast,
And they flew it home.
that my friends brought home for me, and I enjoyed
Oh wow! I mean, that's good friends. I mean,
it.
I love you to death, Jeff. But if that's that good, you may not get the
There
bottle.
may be a tax
Anyway,
involved
yeah,
in
maybe
the
just
form of a second bottle
yeah.
for
Okay,
my
that
services to get that across the border for
okay,
you to
fair enough.
qualify.
But wow, we're about to finish off this bottle of mead here, man.
Yes, we are. I mean, it's only a 375. That is it's kind of the kick in the pants when it comes to sap houses. They mostly do 375,
I'm
so
not mad about that, but the fact that we're finishing it says a lot about this mead.
it's interesting and a little wild, and I didn't expect to like it as much as I did.
Yeah, I mean,
The smoke is, again, it's not as it's there, it's not very pronounced. It's kind of just that little tertiary or ancillary kind of flavor that.
yeah. But I want to tell you, I don't, please, I hope we did not make you not want to enter competitions,
Right, yeah. This
because we're trying to help you, not trying to scare you.
Be cautious with what you're doing. be thoughtful about what you're doing, and you can do this easily. The feedback you get from competitions is, I think, unique in the world because they want to help you make better mead. The reason I started getting into competitions is so I could get, Chris, you know I love you to death. You're one of my oldest friends. But if I hand you a mead, I'm pretty sure you're going to say, oh, it's pretty good, even if it's not exactly to your thing.
Yeah, and that's happened a few times. Because I know you like drier meads than I do. And you know, and I'll say it's a little dry for me, but I'm not going to give you a critique necessarily. Right. But you're going to get a very unique third-party evaluation of what you're doing and feedback.
Right.
Number one is where you're getting feedback.
You get feedback that is not hey, I like you or I don't like you, and my opinion of you is colored by this. It is strictly as unbiased and as blind to who you are and your relationship to the judge as possible.
Yeah, and that's how you make better mead. Mm-hmm. Making mead is a labor of love. If I had oodles and boodles of funding, Jeff and I would be sitting at a meadery doing these.
Not necessarily to sell to the public, but just for funsies.
Sell? but we love doing it, and we love you coming along with us on this, but I strongly recommend, if you're going to make mead on a regular basis, enter competition.
Yeah. And the other thing I will tell you is that you should probably enter more than one. We talk about Valkyrie's Horn because it's a six-hour drive for us. It's closer than the Mazer Cup was back when it was in, not Denver, but a suburb of Denver.
Yeah.
Like in this adjacent city to Denver.
And it's honestly the only one I've gone to, so right. It really sticks out in my head.
I've done, you know, the Mazer. I've done the Valkyrie's Horn. I've done a few smaller ones here or there with local homebrew clubs, but those are the two big ones.
Yeah.
Send it to a few, because judges... You have no control over which two judges are going to be judging your meats in that first round.
To the point of, the judges don't know what they're going to judge in the first round.
No.
The chance of you getting the same judge twice is small.
Staggeringly small. I don't think I've ever had two judges judge my stuff. I don't enter a lot of competitions, but some judges are going to taste things different ways. And the judge pairing is going to affect your score. I've seen wide, even on one of the ones that I really liked, I've seen it score really, really low with one pair and like almost perfect with another pair. It's staggering. Like you can go, 34 points on one side and 47 on the other. And that's all down to the judges and how they perceive it.
So you're doing the same thing with the judges as you're doing with your friends that are helping you taste it.
Mm-hmm.
Get a pool.
Right.
So, yeah, get them judged out. I'm going to be sending more, hopefully this year, I'm going to be sending more meads out to be judged, because I'm realizing how much fun and useful it is.
Right.
As a maker.
And honestly, like the local, I cannot say enough, hey, send to your local homebrew clubs. That gives, a lot of these guys don't get to try meads in the first place, so it's some experience for their judges. The cost to enter is usually like, what, a few bucks per entry?
Yeah.
And if you can just drop it off,
no shipping.
It costs nothing versus, if you go to, if you're sending stuff to, Mazer or to Valkyrie's Horn or to, different competitions across the nation, you're paying 20, 40 bucks just in shipping, not even counting materials each time.
And then you're also not talking about entry fees.
Right.
Entry fees, the bigger competitions have bigger entry fees.
They do.
And they should.
Yes. That is not to say that it's not, the bigger competitions are also like commercial and amateur.
Yeah.
No one's making money off of this though.
Yeah.
They're
covering their cost, man.
Right. And more often than not, we're paying between like $5 to $15 per entry for an amateur thing. More often than not, if you're a commercial mead maker, my understanding is you're paying something like 100 to 200 per entry.
Per entry.
You're more often than not, the commercial side of this is actually covering the cost of the competition. And
because they're looking for the cred.
Right. It seems like this should be easy because everybody is doing this on a voluntary basis, but that's a lot of people's time and effort. And so there are all kinds of expenses as far as just like the paper that they're going through, printing out
hall rental.
Yeah. Renting out a hall, getting, catering for lunches and snacks and dinners. Somebody went to, Panera that morning and got two big things of coffee and a big box of bagels so that our judges that were overslept and had to run to judge
Had something to eat.
in their stomach before they drank, seven
I'm
flanks of
some
meat.
meat. Good. Yeah, and they're not making money this, and they're giving you good information.
Yeah.
Do what you can afford, man, but I also do not think this is a money-making venture. It's not.
Right. That said, support your local clubs because they're probably these are smaller competitions with less entries, and that 5 to 7 bucks or whatever that you're spending per entry counts for something, man.
Yeah, I mean,
And as well as just support and giving them more exposure.
yeah, I mean, you and them. So there's the nuts and bolts about trying to enter into a competition. Do it. Highly recommend it. Be a part of it. I
It's a lot of
recommend that
fun. I mean,
insanely
yeah.
more. I mean, I'll be honest, first time Jeff drugged me up to the competition, it was almost he literally threw me in the car to drive me up there. I mean, it was just almost that bad. I'm like, I don't know how he goes, I'm just gonna be passing out. I'm just, a waiter with alcohol. Big deal. It is so much more. You
No.
meet so many cool people.
Well, and the reason I like Valkyrie's Horn so much is because their focus is on education for the judges. There's always at least one kind of talk that is generally something interesting to talk about in the mead, wine, beer, cider kind of making, ecosphere kind of situation. And that I think is kind of worth your weekend all by itself, not to mention, oh my God, the bottle share
Oh my
and the
gosh.
parties and just talking to people who are as nuts about this as we are.
I know you guys heard, you maybe heard a few stories, but the bottle share night, we all go down to a big conference room, we share what we made, and I kid you not, as many people as there's more bottles than there are people. And everybody's having, we're talking about how to do this, what you can do to help that. This is, oh, this is so cool. Well, how'd you do this? How'd you do it? It is such a wonderful experience. I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, and again, it might not be the huge deal of a bottle share at Mazer Cup or at Valkyrie's Horn, but your local, homebrew club, they probably need a volunteer or two too, if you want to jump in as a steward. Or hey, check out the BJCP's website. They've got mead judging and beer judging exams
Applications, yeah.
all the time, at least one a year. And getting into the tasting exam is the hard part. But I know both of those big competitions, generally the Mazer Cup, and if I'm not mistaken, the Valkyrie's Horn as well, they have a tasting exam somewhere around that time, just because there's going to be a lot of mead judges in the area at the time, I think. Don't quote me on that,
But
but.
if you want to get into that, get into that, because I have been asked when I'm going to become a judge. When I get everything settled out health-wise, I'm going to be a judge because it's that much fun. It really is.
It's yeah no and I they're I think a lot of it is just they can see your dedication and how much you enjoy it, and they're like, okay, I mean, you're what are you gonna do
Yeah, and that he, they actually approached me and said, "Hey, when can we make you a judge?" I'm sitting here, let me get these things figured out. I'm in. And he's like, cool, and walked off happy.
Yeah, why not?
But hey, Jeff, great meet with you. Good talk. I mean,
Yes.
this is, I honestly wish I would have had this kind of information in front of me
Yeah.
when I did my first game,
Yeah.
because I would have made a lot less mistakes.
And hey, again, our listeners out there, if you have questions about stuff, we didn't even talk about categories. We
Yeah.
the fact of the matter is, and I forget exactly, you had a I think it should have been a fruit and
It
spice,
should have been a fruit and spice. I
and it
put it in
got
the fruit.
and it entered as a fruit. These are weird things. And yeah, the BJCP's guidelines, you can look these categories up on their website. They have PDF after PDF for this stuff. Do a
And
little
if
bit of
you
homework.
don't know,
Ask.
call them. Ask. They'll be more than glad to tell you. They want you to get judged. They want you to get a medal.
You might not want to call the BJCP directly, but reach out to a program organizer for the competition you're looking at. They will be able to tell you. Or, hell, you can find us on Facebook or info@themeadhouse.com, and we can
And we'll
try
tell
our
you.
damnest to, tell you where it should be too.
I'll give it a hell of a try, and Jeff, I'll be right.
I like to think I'm right. I'm not 100% on that, but
And who is?
I like to think I can suss out where that should belong.
Yeah. Hey, happy meeting, guys. Hope you win 100 medals, but have a nice day.
Right, guys.